1988, when we talked with Amina Hajar and Dr. Lael Duncan earlier on the program. Well, it's 10 o'clock, and without further ado, it is time for Epicenter. This is Epicenter on KWMR West Marin Community Radio. Epicenter is rebroadcast Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. featuring a wide array of community and public affairs. Today, I am engineering for your host, Supervisor Dennis Fredoni, who will, later in the program, be talking to Shelley Scott. Welcome to the airwaves, Dennis.
Good morning, Amanda. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I assume you're going to give us your weekly roundup, and I'll get Shelley on the phone during that. I'm glad to see you. Looks like you're at Civic Center today.
I am, yep, and I'm also glad to hear about that rain forecast coming up. 80% sounds pretty good right now.
It sure does.
All right, I'll do into my week-to-week COVID update, and you can get Shelley on the line. So Marin confirmed cases this past week reached 11,020. That's an increase of 175, just a small uptick from the week before when we had 163 cases. But they're looking those case numbers are looking really good. We stayed at 169 deaths for the last couple weeks, which is really good news. I'll explain why I think that's happening a little later in this data update. Tests completed, 367,000. That's an increase of 12,000 in the last week, and we really want people to continue to get tested, especially our essential workers. Cases in the last 14 days, 277, that's a decrease of 46, and that's kind of the active cases, what we would classify as active COVID cases. So that 277, that means there's that many active cases in Marin currently, which is really a low number, lowest it's been for quite a while. Marin hospitalizations went up 4 to 342, currently hospitalized 15, and 4 of those are in ICU, but those hospitalizations have been relatively flat. California confirmed cases went over 3.58 million cases total, again, 40,000 in the last week. Number of deaths, confirmed deaths in California jumped to 52,773 over the last week. That was an increase of 2,934, which was a slight increase from the previous week. But overall, the COVID numbers are looking relatively flat. Good news, and probably the explanation of not having any more deaths in Marin, is our skilled nursing care and residential care facilities had no cases over the last week. 2 weeks, actually, and no deaths over the last 2 weeks, which is really, really good news. That was the whole purpose of identifying and prioritizing the 75 and older in our community for vaccinations. And now that all of them have gotten their second vaccination, we're seeing the benefits of that. West Marin added only one case, I believe, in the last week. We're now at 168. 4 of which are active, again, 47 in Point Reyes Station, 21 in Woodacre, 15 in Inverness, 21 in Nicasio. Stinson Beach is at 18 and Bolinas is at 18. I think the one case was added into Bolinas this last week. Really good news on the vaccination front. We now have 62,317 first doses. That's about 24% of the total population, and actually more like 30% of the population when you take out children who aren't eligible for that vaccination right now. We've got 28,141 people who have had now the second dose. That's a little, almost 11%. And that was increased from 6,000 people in the last week that have actually gotten their second dose. The reason we're able to increase these numbers so much is we've been getting 18,000 doses a week the last week and again this week. And so we're seeing predictions now that public health thinks they can vaccinate all of Marin by the end of June, which is really, really good news. And as you know, we're in the red tier, which is also good news, where restaurants can now do indoor dining at 25%. Gyms can open up to 10%, and churches and museums can now have indoor visitation. So that's really good news. I'm pleased today to have Shelley Scott joined me. She's the Marin County Assessor Recorder and also clerk. Welcome, Shelley.
Thank you, Dennis. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure to have you here. So, Shelley, tell us a little bit about yourself, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. Well, I live in Novato. I was actually born and raised in Novato. I was born at Hamilton Air Force Base. I'm actually a military brat. I've been here for almost 40 years with the county, serving the residents of Marin. I spent my first 8 years in the clerks in the municipal court and superior court, and the superior court at that time was also joined in with the county clerk's office, and it's just been an amazing ride.
Very good. And I know you were long time service to the Novato School District as a school board member too.
So. That's right. I served on the school board for 9 years, and that was a wonderful experience. And I really enjoy children and giving back to my community. So that was a wonderful experience.
So talk a little bit of how you ended up at the Marin County Assessor's Office. I know you started to talk about it and, you know, how long you've been there. Just a little bit more background.
Yeah, that's kind of actually a funny story. When I was working with the courts, I was an accountant for them in the early 80s, mid-80s. My supervisor told me when we were going to go through budget hearings that I had to give a small presentation, just 3 slides to the board. I was very nervous, very anxious. I did not want to do that at all. And lo and behold, we find ourselves up in these hearings, and I'm sitting in the audience with my supervisor, and I am watching James Delbon, who was the current assessor. He was very charismatic, very energetic, passionate man, and was literally pounding his fist on the table, telling the board at that time he needed more money in his budget because he was losing appraisal staff left and right. They were literally coming in to work for a year only to go out to the private sector and earn, you know, 3 times that amount. And I just found him incredibly charismatic, and I remember leaning over to my boss saying, "Oh my goodness, that man is so passionate about his employees. I need to go work for him." And she laughed and she said, "You should. He's really well respected. And, you know, those appraisers have a fascinating job." So I started looking into it. And it was an amazing piece about real estate as I was doing some research about it. And lo and behold, I'm in the data processing department picking up my batch reporting the next morning. And the help clerk, which was Elaine, asked me, you know, "How did your presentation go before the board? I know you had 3 slides. And I said, "It was miserable. I did awful. I spoke too fast. My hands were sweating. I had terrible anxiety. And I never, ever, ever want to do that again." And she laughed. And I started to tell her about Jim and how I'm going to be looking into maybe transferring departments. And she said, "Oh, yeah, Jimmy, yeah, he's a funny guy." And I said, "Oh, you know, I thought he was terrific. He really cared about his employees." And she said, "Well, I can put in a good word for you if you'd like." And I said, "You know him?" And she's like, "Yeah, Shelley, Jimmy, he's my husband." And I just laughed and I said, "You got to be kidding." So I put in an application. I certainly didn't get hired the first go around, but the second time he had another opening, I was hired and I started working in his change in ownership department. And I started as a legal clerk with him. And literally he knew that I eventually wanted to be the assessor. I was just so taken with him and, you know, all that the office did. At that time, he was the assessor recorder. So I got an opportunity to work in the recorder's office. And, you know, it was really great because he mentored me my years here. And I was just so fortunate to be able to work in literally every division within the assessor and the recorder's office. So it was just an amazing experience. I've absolutely thoroughly enjoyed my career.
So you probably described this already and talked about this, but what about your path to being Marin County Assessor, Recorder, and Clerk? How about that path?
Well, you know, I love public service. I love helping people. It really feels good to help people navigate government. I think a lot of people, you know, one, don't know who the assessor is or what the assessor's office does. I mean, what the assessor's office does is, you know, we value, you know, all real and business personal property. And, you know, we're required, you know, under the law and under statute, Prop 13, to assess all property and place that on the assessment roll. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people understand and correlate that when they get their tax bill, because that's actually the tax collector that actually mails the bill and the treasurer that collects those funds. But, you know, I just think it's important to do that outreach for folks.
Sure. And I think probably most of the public, it's only the tax bill that they realize that this assessor's involved, but you have a much bigger job because you're assessing many other things, including commercial space and inventories. And so maybe talk a little bit about your job and that part of your job.
So in terms of the assessor's office, you know, we assess boats, aircraft, businesses. Those are all on the what's called the unsecured roll, and those are all in our business section. Those companies report their equipment, and then it's depreciated. Then, you know, we arrive at an assessed value, and then, you know, we send out the tax bill. And certainly on the real property side, we handle residential properties. We handle multi-res, and we also handle commercial, and that's on the secured side. And those are some things that, you know, we handle on this side of the house.
Yep. And how about on the recorder's role, on the recorder side of the department? I'm not sure people really understand what that job is. How would you explain that to the listening public out there?
Yeah, so the recorder's office, we're charged with maintaining, you know, documents, real property ownership, you know, births, deaths, marriages, and then certainly on the county clerk side of the house, we handle civil ceremonies, you know, processing marriage licenses, fictitious business names, you know, other legal documents, those kind of things. The recorder's office is basically kind of like the legal documents library, if you will. And we're open to the public right now. We're only servicing people by appointment only. We're very fortunate that we have an e-recording program that we work with all the title companies on. So certainly through COVID, we were really fortunate to have that up and running so that, you know, people's million-dollar deals did not get, you know, sidetracked or delayed in any way, because a delay would certainly cost a lot of people a lot of money. So we were very fortunate with the lockdown that we were able to, my staff, I mean, just kudos to my staff, we were able to still process everything without missing a beat. So kudos to them and all of our partners with the title companies, because we all work hand in hand, and it was just a tremendous lift, but I just kudos to all of them because we got it done.
And I think of the recorder's office as the keeper of all the important papers, but when you think of that for the whole county, that must be a tremendous responsibility. And maybe you could talk about where that's all kept or how that's all kept.
Yeah, so when you property changes hands and you record a deed and a deed of trust, all of that gets recorded. It gets imaged in our systems, and we index all of it for our systems. And then that actual physical copy, the originals always get mailed back to the owners, the end user on that. So, you know, usually in about anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks, if you've recorded a deed or a transfer of title, or even if you've paid off your mortgage and you have a deed of reconveyance, you know, that once we've recorded it, imaged it, and indexed it, it gets returned back to the owner. We don't hold all of that. We hold it all in an imaging file.
Very good. Thank you. So getting back to property taxes, I know people probably think about this a lot. When do they get reassessed, and what causes that to happen, or what triggers that reassessment?
Well, a reassessment can happen if you sell your property, and that would trigger a reassessment. If you were to put somebody on title, say you decide to put your brother or your sister on title, there's no provision under the tax code that exempts that. So if you were to give your brother 50% of your property, that would trigger a 50% change in ownership, and we would reassess the property at fair market value. The date that deed is recorded, and it would be reassessed at fair market value, and then you would see an increase in your tax bill. Another thing that would trigger a reassessment would be if you were to take a permit out and do a kitchen remodel or a bath remodel. Those are considered capital improvements, and that also adds value. That's something we would also send a tax bill out on. Certainly, if you would replace your windows or your roof, that's not something we would add value for. That's just considered really repair and maintenance. That's not something we would add value for. But those are typically the general things that we see where we're actually adding value to the tax roll.
Good. And if a property owner disagrees with your assessment, what's the process that they can go through to have that looked at?
Yeah, no, thank you for asking us. It's such a great question. So if people aren't in agreement with that assessed value, what I recommend them do first is to reach out to my office. And that phone number is 415-473-4000. 7215. And you can certainly talk with my staff, ask who the appraiser is that's assigned to your area. And, you know, first what I encourage people to do is just have a conversation. But again, if it's not resolved at that level, they have the opportunity to file an appeal. And they have to be very careful of the dates filing an appeal. The dates for appeal are July 1 through November 30th of every year. And we have an assessment appeals board. We actually have two assessment appeals boards. There's a charge of $50 for filing the appeal. That's just for administrative processing. And just so I also want to just let everybody know that the appeals board is made up of independent brokers and real estate professionals, and they're not connected with my office at all, so they're completely separate from the assessor's office. And they hear your case. They hear, you know, why you think your property is worth, you know, what you think it's worth, and my staff will give indications on why they feel the assessed value is, you know, fair and appropriate for the property. But it's, it can sometimes be a lengthy process. It can take up to 2 years to get your case heard. We're currently not that backlogged at this time, so I'd say now we're probably running anywhere from 6 months to a year, just depending upon. I know COVID has kind of backlogged that. It took us a little while to figure out how to process things with Zoom. So now we are having hearings. We're back to doing that, but it's in a Zoom format at this time. And thankfully, kudos to all of our IT folks as well, because they've been very helpful with our residents in Marin that weren't familiar with Zoom. They've been terrific with helping them and helping them to learn how to share their screen and present their case to the board. So I just want to say a shout out to them and a big thank you.
And it's my understanding that only a small percentage end up going to appeal, that many times you're able to work it out with your staff the property owner.
I would say less than 5% actually make it to an appeal hearing. Very few people actually go to that process.
Terrific. So let's talk about Proposition 13. While it's been on the books for a long time, it's always in the public's discussion. How has your role or the assessor role changed since because of Prop 13? And then I have a follow-up about trying to override it, but I'll start with that one.
Yeah, so prior to Prop 13, property used to be assessed in the state. We used to canvass all the areas in Marin County. It took about 4 years for every reassessment, but every reassessment in 4 years would get taken a look at by the appraisers, and they would be reassessed at fair market value. In fact, it was the big voter revolt in the 70s that created Prop 13, because people, it is very difficult to manage and prepare for financially if you didn't know if your property taxes were going to go up 10%, 20%, or 30%. And it was taxing a lot of the elderly literally out of their homes, because once you're retired, your earnings are, you know, fairly set. And it was a real difficult time for people. So that's really what prompted Prop 13 and the voter revolt, was just, you know, people couldn't budget and plan for the taxes, because if there was a surge in real estate, it was difficult to be able to pay those taxes.
Mm-hmm. And then there's been several attempts to override Prop 13. Do you think that'll happen at some point? And maybe why or why not?
Well, I know that they've tried a few times with what's typically known as the split roll. In fact, last year they actually tried with Prop 15. It was defeated by the voters, and that wasn't a full repeal of Prop 13. The split roll was mostly targeting the commercial side of the house. You know, right now, at least in this county, the commercial, and I'd probably say up and down the county, but there's some loopholes right now in current law that the commercial side of the house just doesn't pay, in my opinion. I won't speak for others, but in my opinion, they don't pay their fair share. There's a lot of various loopholes for them to actually work through so that they're not paying a very large assessment. And it's certainly nowhere near, many of them, fair market value.
So last year, the voters passed Proposition 19, and it went into effect, I think, earlier this year. How's that going to change how properties may or may not be reassessed?
Well, yeah.
Or assessed. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hidden in Prop 19 was the repeal of Proposition 58, which was in back in 1986, it was a constitutional amendment, which was a parent-to-child, child-to-parent transfer. And that's where you could transfer your property up to $1 million in assessed value to your children without a change in the property tax. Well, now this revision under 19, they're only allowing it if your children reside in the home. And if they don't continue to reside in the home, and there's a lot of controversy up and down the state right now because the language of this proposition was so poorly written, it doesn't address various other provisions in the code. So I know that they're working on some emergency legislation. I don't believe at this time, to my knowledge, they haven't hammered out a lot of the details, and it'll probably take years to get a lot of it hammered out. Yeah. 19, unfortunately, it's just going to be a heavy lift for assessor's offices up and down the state, because we're going to be charged with every time somebody passes, we're going to be charged with having to do an appraisal on the property, and trying to track that information. There's going to be a two-way tracking system for this, depending upon who the heirs are and passing that property on. I'm hoping one of the things that I've been pushing for, I've met with Senator McGuire and the House Speaker, Senator Hertzberger, because what I'd like to see right now under Prop 19 is for a sunset on that clause, because right now, if your child, should they, being a military brat, if they inherit your property, or you choose to give them your property under this new provision, but they're in the military, and typically military orders, change every 2 to 4 years. If they're not living in that property, it gets reassessed, and it'll be reassessed. Right now, at least the interpretation is it would be assessed when they get the property, and then factored forward depending upon when it is they leave the property. And for me, I just don't really think that's fair. I'm not in agreement with that. I also don't like it if your child works for a global corporation and they take a promotion, but perhaps that promotion isn't working in the San Francisco office. It's working in the London office. So if they move out of that property, I'm charged with reassessing that property. It's just going to be a really large administrative lift. I'm going to have to be tracking these properties. I'm going to have to be reporting them to the state. You can also do this Prop 19 transfer outside of the parent-to-child piece of it. You can also, and this is the piece I do like of Prop 19, is you are able, anywhere up and down the state, you're able to transfer your property value. Mm-hmm. So that's an option as well. And then depending upon that equal or lesser test, there are provisions where, if you sold your property for $1 million and, you were only assessed at $500, but you wanted to relocate to, Monterey County and you purchased that property, you don't have to meet that equal or lesser test any longer. If it is something that's a little bit higher, there's going to be, a value adjustment upward depending upon what that difference is.
So you're looking for some legislative cleanup, because I did hear recently was it's not even clear if both the children who inherit the property have to live in the house or only one, because the legislation or the measure was so unclear. There was just so much needed so much clarity. Look forward to that cleanup coming.
Yeah,
hopefully soon.
Yeah, the California Assessors Association is, working closely with the Board of Equalization and the legislature. We have 45 pages of recommended cleanup language because of how this addresses, it took out Prop 58, and it also took out Prop 193, and then, Prop 90 was also, modified in some way. So your parent-to-child and your grandparent to grandchild issues have all been changed, but there wasn't a lot of language in terms of administering it. To give you an example, here's one that I know that will probably end up in the court if they don't clean it up somehow. And just as an example, let's say dad passed away in 2015, mom passes away in 2025, kids inherit the property, in 2025. Well, okay, so which rule prevails? If dad passed away in 2015, are we under Prop 58 rules? But mom passed away in 2019, or are we under Prop 19 rules? And mm-hmm. one is clearly more advantageous than the other. So yeah. it'll be interesting. There's just a lot of loopholes there that just really weren't addressed.
Yep. So I want to jump to accessory dwelling units. I know you and I have had many conversations about accessory dwelling units or ADUs, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about those a little bit, about the assessor roles with ADU and when that would occur, when it happens. You know, it's a big push in Marin to build ADUs because that's one of the opportunities to create housing. Do you want to talk a little bit about accessory dwelling units and related to how you might reassess a property when they have a new one?
Sure. So, you know, I have some people that, you know, if you wanted to put, say you have a half acre property and you wanted to put up a prefabbed ADU on your property. Well, that is considered a capital improvement. That's something that we would add value for. When you pull your permit, you're going to be required to submit two sets of plans, one for the building department and one for the assessor's office, so that I can update your property characteristics, and so that I can, you know, cost and take a look at, you know, what that improvement is, what's the market value of that improvement. And with that, we're also going to be sending you a permit questionnaire and asking you about your project. Did you have any problems with the project? Did you go over scope of project? Were you under scope of project? That way there, you know, we can dial in exactly on what you have, and we can update our records and, you know, make the correct assessment. And there's other pieces where some people are looking to build out their basement, and maybe your basement on our records only shows that it's maybe only 20 or 30% built out. But maybe the prior owner, before you purchased that property, built that whole bottom floor out, and all you're doing is adding a kitchenette. It already has a bathroom and maybe an exterior door. Well, if anybody's doing an ADU, I just recently did a workshop, and I encouraged everybody, if you're considering doing an ADU, please contact my office. Talk with the appraiser who's assigned to your area and have a conversation. Find out first, what do you think the assessor's records have on your property? Because, you know, many times, many years ago in the 40s and the 50s, people did work to their homes and they really didn't go through that formal process of pulling a permit. But if that property has changed hands, that build out is already encompassed into your sales price. So that's not something we would add value for. But certainly if you finished out and just did the kitchenette, you might see an assessment for the kitchenette. That might be, it depends upon, you know, if it has an oven, if it's got, gas stove. It really depends upon, you know, the type of kitchen. If it's just simply a countertop and a microwave, no, I don't see us adding value for it. It's just really going to be case by case each and every time. But there are folks that literally have walled off a room and just are renting out the room and the bathroom and just creating an exterior wall. Those are primarily the JADUs. Those typically don't fall under reassessment, but, you know, what I encourage everybody to do is just really reach out to my office and have a conversation. Take a look at what your property record looks like. Find out, you know, what we have is what we have accurate. You don't know what a prior owner may have done to the property.
Shelley, I'm getting the sign we need to wrap up. I really want to thank you for joining me today, and thank you for that discussion. Appreciate it so much. Thanks, Amanda.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Very interesting. Thank you both.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Epicenter is a series dedicated to community and public affairs in West Marin. If you have ideas for topics, email programming at kwmr.org. Epicenter is rebroadcast at 5 p.m. every Monday through Thursday, and you can stream the audio archives of Epicenter shows on our homepage, kwmr.org. Thanks for listening.